episode of Conversation is supported by the generous donations of Klaus Schwab. You can support us too at truthmeets.com. Click on the donate link.
Thank you, Bella.
All sorts of trouble for that. Let me just tell you now, they're in all sorts of trouble for that song.
Is this the after show Saturday, the 19th of July, Rick and Rollo, 19th after show?
After show, Thursday night.
Sorry, I've had a few beers as well. So who's getting upset by that?
Is it
the Protestants or the Catholics? Like, which
I think everyone always... because. I can't work it out, but all I know is that when they were kicked out of America, they came out and they did the same free Palestine stuff at Glastonbury.
Let me read a couple of comments on the actual video itself, Nick. Okay, so let me. All right, okay, so all right. I'm glad to see Helen the Legend get a cameo. Yeah.
Irish politician at the moment. Now, okay. I have to say this.
I was just going to read some of these comments on here. Kneecap and friends, I'm Palestinian. I never thought the world would be chanting for us. I thought the propaganda against us was going to work. I make anti-colonial metal, but I was very afraid of speaking out. My grandfather and many people were hurt for speaking. Thanks for giving us hope and the guts to try and speak. That's a guy called G. The Palestinians deserve the justice and suffering that they've endured, and this has been going on for far too long. So I'll see you, Don Palestinian. I'd say, again, I don't speak. I don't speak.
I've never been there, but
there's all sorts of love for this song.
Oh, they love it. We put Kneecap and Abel and Sniffers on way before they became.
And there's almost as many thumbs down as thumbs up on this video.
I bet there are. I just love anyone that, as soon as someone says, you shouldn't listen to this band because they're saying something, I go bang, boom, I'm going to listen to that band.
It's pretty cool. It's got 267,000 views in 11 days.
Yeah.
From Kneecap, who's only got 160,000 subscribers.
Exactly.
that's incredible to me. Can we hear it again?
They're pro-Irish. And look, the fact that your genealogy, and Rollo, I'm going to have to shout you out
I've
here.
I've got nothing to do with me. Oh, here you go. I think we got someone join us. I just heard, yes, someone's joined. Fast Value. Unmute, my friend, if you want to talk about that.
We're talking about with Fast Value about AI music and how unreal it sounds. Sorry.
There we go.
Unreal it sounds.
Fast, join us, my friend.
Hey, yeah, Rick, did I pin you yesterday?
Yeah, you did. I saw it, and I watched it. Yeah, fantastic stuff.
Yeah, he was talking about how AI can't create. No. It's just going to scrape and grab things other people have created, paste them together, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, he's doing good work with that.
And by coincidence, his name's Rick as well, but he's doing some really good stuff.
I always think of that whenever I post this stuff.
But look, I've got a friend who's a audio engineer, and he's been working since the 60s doing production. And he was a singer and he actually instrumentalist as well. And he said kind of the same thing, that they can pick up artificial intent and sound and music. But I'm sadly, the majority of the public won't pick that up. So that's where I see there's a bit of a problem with it. But you know, you're right. You know, there's a there that artificial music, AI produced music. So something you say, I want to hear a song between. I've always been concerned that was going to happen, and I would say it's not so much us that we need to worry about, it's the general public that actually listen to top 20 music and like it just on its basis that it sounds good. There's a, you know, I'm 50-50 with the whole thing. I think that it could be bad or it could be good. That's where I'm going. What did you think of Nuno Betancourt? I'm more interested in your opinion of Nuno Betancourt performance supporting five different bands on the Black Sabbath's final shows. Did you see him in action? And what guitar was he?
No, I love Nuno. I think Nuno's incredible, but I don't know what you're talking about. So you have to catch me up on that.
Oh, well, look, I don't know what guitar he's playing. It's a strange brown. It's brown. It's got a stripe, a white stripe down the side of it. Whatever that guitar is, that is going to be the most sold guitar in the next 2 years, once that footage comes out, professionally produced. Because he was playing, to me, almost as good as Randy Rhodes. And he plays it down, he goes, I was just trying to imitate Randy Rhodes. To me, he was doing exactly Randy Rhodes' guitar solos. But if you haven't seen it, you're not going to know, but I was impressed.
Well, I'm sure he could. He's definitely, he wouldn't have any problem with that. He's phenomenal.
Look, I was watching it and I was going, when he came on, there's actually a YouTube of him after the event walking around talking to himself, supposedly filming himself on his iPhone, which he probably was, saying how great it was. And I was going, you were actually fairly, to me, as a guy that's been in the metal for quite a long time, you did a good job. But you got to watch it. I highly recommend when it comes out, you have a look at what he was doing.
Well, I need a little more detail about how to find it.
Well, that's the problem. As I was watching it on Facebook, it seemed to be getting deleted as fast as I was watching different. Because, you know, obviously we've got iPhones now. We can go to a concert and we can film and record fairly good quality music and images. It seemed to be getting deleted that fast off, particularly the Steven Tyler stuff. Steven Tyler, that guy's 77 years of age. That guy can sing fantastic for a 77-year-old. Did you see Whole Lot of Love by Steven Tyler?
Is this all stuff from Glastonbury or something?
It was the Birmingham. You know, you're listening to After Show Rick and Rob.
No matter what you say,
you're listening to another conversation
or your preoccupation
on truthmeets.com.
You can practice every day.
And now on with the conversation.
The art of conversation.
And you're listening to the after show of Rick and Rollo, episode number 39. And you've got Fast Belly all the way from America on here talking about guitaring as we are at the moment. Yeah, Fast, definitely worth watching.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, I was talking to someone here, but I didn't hear what you, where you said it was filmed or where it was taken from.
It was filmed at the, back to the beginning, in Birmingham. It was 2 weeks ago, Ozzy Osbourne's and Black Sabbath's final show, allegedly. And I don't even believe that, to be honest, because already I'm seeing that he's actually going to come back and do a final tour.
And, like the Eagles' final tours.
Exactly. But, I mean, you've seen him. Look, to be honest, I trust Ozzy Osbourne. I actually believe he is that working class guy. I don't trust his wife, Sharon. She's just out there to make money. I think that they will try and milk one more thing out of this. I mean, I've been watching final tours of bands since, you know, you're older than me a little bit, but there's been a lot of final tours going on that keep going on and on and on. Eagles is a great example. They keep turning back up again for one, you know, one more tour. They call their last tour the Hell Freezes Over. And they're still playing. So there's a lot of money out there.
It's kind of funny because I don't know if this still goes on, but you could go to New York City and see stores that have signs that say, you know, last days, final day, going out of business. No, and the signs exactly have been up for years.
That's a sign. Look, it's the same. So it's not those rugs, you know, you see those rugs, Indian rug shops everywhere. You know, final store, final sale, closing down sale, no more, no more, no more. And they keep turning back home because wherever there's money, business keeps wanting to turn over stuff. And rock music's the same way. It's just the sad repeat. Rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat.
Well, the news that I have for today is that finally, for the first time ever, I got to see Toto last night here in Florida, where I am currently. And man, Toto, were they good.
So Toto did Africa?
Oh, yeah. We'll hold the line, Africa. Oh, yep. 99,
yeah.
Georgie Porgy. They've got
Toto and Boston, the band, very similar, very professional sound, very late 70s icons. Still going.
70s, 80s. Toto. I'm pronouncing it like Ab would want me to pronounce it. I usually call him Toto.
Toto.
They're the kind of the brainchild and project of Steve Lukather, who's the guitar.
I know him.
He's
great guitar.
And now, so one of my friends last night told me they thought he had played on 4,000 albums or recordings.
Wow.
I recognize the name Greg Fillinganes is a keyboard player, not so much the drummer, but you know, the original Toto, all those guys were the LA studio session players.
Yeah.
And like for years when I was playing music professionally in clubs, Toto was the standard that we all wanted to sound like and play like, to be that good and play as good as those guys. And
yep.
But I am telling you, when you hear the veterans, that I would say, you know, Steve Lukather, his hair is totally white. It's still like a big, you know, big nest of hair on his head, white beard. But I was thinking he looks like a Viking, like a Norse, Game of Thrones, like a commanding figure, this veteran of, you know, he's so iconic. He's from the 70s. But the level of talent and musicianship was so extreme. They sounded so incredible. It was, I was just like amazed at how fantastic. How really, really good music. And I'm, you know, kind of, and after looking at that AI stuff, I'm like, no way, no way. It is not going to happen, folks. They are not going to do this. They might can do some things, you know. You can get your five-year-old and have him stick his fingers in paint. He's not Van Gogh. It's not the same thing, you know. It's paint on paper, whatever, but yeah, it's not. They're just, that's not going to happen. So I'm not too worried about it per se. I think as long as there's artists that love their instruments, that love playing, that are passionate about it, you know, they'll be able to be heard. They might. The money thing warps everything, though. So there's that, you know.
Yeah.
If they.
Well, interesting tonight, I picked up 10 vinyl albums from one of my jobs, and one of them was Tony Joe White. First album from 1970, and he, while I was picking up the vinyl, I thought I should find out how much they're worth, you know, because you know I'm a big, quite keen on how much the stuff's worth. But Tony Joe White and George Thorogood both say the same thing: when they learn their guitar, they learned it without any training. They learned it off records, what they were listening to, and they've become quite iconic guitarists. Like Tony Joe White was good, George Thorogood was really good. The fact that they learned it off a record, off the stuff they were listening to back in the day, and pro musicians that they were working with used to say, you know, you're doing it all wrong, but it sounds good. And so music to me is how you listen to it and how you interpret it. You've got your Frank Zappas and Steve Vai's out there that are guitarists that are of the highest magnitude. But I like to hear people that learn music without any lessons. And they somehow sound to be better. To me, better than the other guys that learned it professionally. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, musicians have a kind of a joke, a saying. And now you could take a job, say, with a pickup band, a one-night job, and you might have charts that you'd read if you don't know all the songs. And they would call you and say, do you read music? And the joke is, yes, I do. But not enough to hurt my playing.
Exactly. So I'm picking up some of my favorite musicians are not. They actually brag that they are not. Glenn Campbell would be one of the classic examples. He had no idea how to read music. Tony Joe White, no idea how to read music. George Thorogood, no idea how to read music. Yet. Their stuff live in a pub, and they come out and play. It's like a religious experience because they just come out and play the way it sounds. And I think it's fabulous that there are people out there that they brag.
But you know, I used to work with a keyboard player. He was educated, and I went to school for music. I was educated. I don't read well. I don't practice it. It's like anything. The more you read, it literally is like reading a book. The more you do it, the better you get at doing it.
Yeah.
And after a while, it's mainly the rhythmic patterns that you need to recognize. And like when you start reading, you sound out words and you put the letters together. But after a while, you just see it as a word. And the rhythmic patterns are the same way. Once you see them, you just play them. You don't have to, you know, count them out in your head. And that's how it gets better. But anyway, this keyboard player I worked with, he thought that the jazz was kind of regulated to black musicians early on, it was kind of racist in that classical music once upon a time was more like jazz. They would have what they called cadenzas in the middle of these pieces that the musicians would improvise, and they would do stuff that wouldn't be written down.
Exactly. And that's what Tony Joe Watts is. So what you're saying, Tony Joe Watts is the same thing.
The writing was the recording of the day. That's how they archived the music, because there wasn't any other way to capture it. There was no recording, no audio recording. So they would have to write down what the music was, so the next generation or whatever would know what they had been playing. But it was always secondary. But over time, that became like the, for lack of a better word, we'll just call it white, the elite thing, where now you had to be part of a conservatory, educated, know how to read, interpret everything very strictly and specifically to be in that white category, and was very anti-improvisation. So it became kind of like elite, classical music did anyway. I kind of think that's where they dropped the ball in a lot of ways, and that's why we don't, why classical music is not as popular as it once was. But the same thing could be said of big bands too, economics, and that's where the AI is going to be, the economics of AI. Is what might push it into more prominence, I guess, let's say. But it can't replace it, because the difference is just so dramatic. And the AI has to have something to look for to scrape and cobble together and produce whatever you're asking. It, like that last video of Rick Beato, where he just made the prompts and...
Yeah,
and he made it very clear that he wasn't creating anything. He was just entering. He was really doing nothing, and everything that had been done was like on the backs of all the other musicians and audio engineers and everything that had learned to play and record and capture sound and all that. It's interesting, but I don't think it's going to be. I'm just so far. I think. Well, Mark, I hate to put this on record, because if JLB's out there, he'll rag me endlessly about being wrong. But I wouldn't be surprised if in 5 years we're not hearing too much about AI anymore, and they'll be moving on to the next Wall Street pump and dump, whatever it is.
Or on website.
I could be wrong. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I hope I am. I hope I'm not.
Well, I've said the same. John Williams, all his film scores, they sound the same. Literally, I'm listening, and it saddens me, because what I do in my house, the only station I can pick up on FM radio is the classical music station. And I've suddenly discovered over the last 4 or 5 years, they've dumbed down classical music. They're playing music that I would not consider classical. They're playing film scores nonstop. And I keep saying, this is the same song. There's no difference between the dual theme to... Raiders of the Lost Ark to Star Wars to what it's the same. It sounds exactly the same. A musical purist would be looking at Bach, Beethoven, all those other where they actually did something different, and you could actually identify each different composer with his music. I can tell Jimi Hendrix between Stevie Ray Vaughan. I saw live right in front of the guy and watched him play back in 83, 84. I knew that it wasn't Jimi Hendrix playing, but I knew that he was playing a very, very good imitation of them using techniques that, I'd never seen before. Literally, I turned around and said, I thought he was miming a Jimi Hendrix record. That's how good he was. But I just think there is an evolution. I do believe an evolution when it comes to instrumental playing. Other people become just as good as someone that they heard before. I don't believe in evolution as humanity. I don't believe that we're any better than we were 500 years ago. I think we're probably worse than we were 500 years ago. Things like AI dumbing us down. But musically, I'm a big fan of music, and I watch how they're taking someone's techniques and, you know, just moving this. Like Randy Rhoads, for instance. But to me, I'm not impressed with Randy Rhoads. Yet, if you watch, and you're going to see, when you do see the concert Back to the Beginning, Randy Rhoads would be the deity of the highest magnitude that they keep talking about and listening to. Anyone that plays like him is the best. Yeah, he was good. What do you think about Randy Rhoads? I'm interested in this conversation.
Oh, well, Randy was incredible. I mean, and especially at that time, he was... You know, he was a little behind Eddie with the tapping thing that was... Who else is really big? The guy from Winger.
Had a couple of those guys. Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah.
We're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yeah, the tapping was a big thing. And that... Now, I don't know about all the albums, but the... Was it Bark at the Moon that had Crazy Train and everything on it?
No, it was
Diary of a Madman, maybe.
Blizzard of Oz.
Blizzard of Oz?
Yeah, Blizzard of Oz.
I read that he triple-tracked all of his solos.
Wow.
Yeah, so that in itself, to me, is now...
There's two things.
We wouldn't call that true improvisation, obviously, because it's pre-planned, and then he repeats it exactly the same every time. But just be able to play that with that level of accuracy. And then, of course, it kind of gives it that sound where it's not every note isn't exactly in the same tune or tone. And it's just that has that real full fat, you know, sort of sound, because it's three different, not just tracks copied and pasted over. He did it three different times.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot to be said for that, in my opinion.
Oh, look, I listened to Nuno Bettencourt's private. He came out about 2 hours after the show finished, and he was talking about what he did. And he was basically saying, I'm not that good. I was just copying off Randy's notes. But to me, I bought those albums when they came out, 81, 82, 83, after I was in the Black Sabbath, you know, in the 70s. I thought that Nuno Bettencourt did exactly the same technique. And I don't know if you've got to watch it. It's got this brown looking guitar with a kind of a white line down the middle of it. Now, whatever that guitar is, if I was an investor, I would be investing in whatever company makes and manufactures that guitar, because that is going to sell big time for all the Randy Rhoads just metalheads out there. They're going to want what?
Yeah, that chip.
Episode last after.
You've reached another top of hour on TruthMeets. Go to truthmeets.com to sign up and participate in our forums and conversations.
You're listening to Ricky Nathan's show with passed over all the way from America and ripped all the way from Australia. So keep going, man. Be told. Oh, no. Don't tell me to be cut off.
No, I'm staying.
Sorry, you're good. I've been cut off 5 times tonight already on Rick and Rollo show. So you think Nuno Bettencourt is a good guitarist? That's what I'm interested in.
Of course, yeah. I saw him. There was he was with Zach Wilde, Steve Vai, someone else. I can't remember who the fourth one was. Yngwie. Yeah, so they all did a show together. They kind of Yngwie Malmsteen, yeah. And it's a very interesting guy, Tobias something. It's also very into the tapping thing. Yeah. Andres A. Tobias is something. I'm mispronouncing his name, but yeah, it was quite the show. And I kind of thought that Zach Wilde kind of stole the show.
Listen, he is a great guitarist. There's no doubt to me. That guy, absolutely. And he's got the look. He looks and he's got the sound. He actually sings Ozzy Osbourne better than Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah, that's what impressed me. It's his delivery of War Pigs and other things that he did. He must have learned something on that tour.
Zach Sabbath is the name of the tour that he did. And the guy is named the title. He's a respected guitarist.
Hey guys, dude, my memory of Zach Wilde was Miracle Man. You know when Ozzy Osbourne had that real piss off with that Jimmy Swaggart, and he sung that the Miracle Man, and Zach Wilde got on that guitar and did those pinched harmonics. Who can do pinched harmonics as good as Zach Wilde can? You know, Miracle Man. when I was trying to play the guitar, I just did pinched harmonics by accident. Not by
that was the thing that that really perked everybody's ears up back in, what was it, the 80s when
83
the first Ozzy album with Zach Wilde. No More Tears.
Now, honestly, those
pitch harmonics were just that's what made that song.
That is Ozzy Osbourne's solo highlight of all his solos.
Did he do Crazy Train with Randy Johnson
Tears, the video, the music, the production is absolutely one of Ozzy Osbourne's greatest solo efforts ever.
All right. Well, I've had too much to drink. I'm going to say goodnight, guys. So I'd like to go out with Bark at the Moon if it's going to be Ozzy Osbourne. Yeah.
No, Bark at the Moon is not. Randy Rhodes, it was, what's his name?
Well, nice to catch up. Hey, you guys keep chatting. I've got about
15 minutes left. I'll keep talking.
Hey, Fuss, it's nice to catch up with you. How's Florida? Oh, no, he's not in Florida. He's in Texas now.
No, I am. I am today. I'm visiting. I am in
Florida. Oh, you're in Florida. Okay, so how's what's it like there? Is it awesome?
Warm, cold.
Rick DeSantis has called me to his office. He has a signed picture that he wants me to mail to you. He told me that I know Rollo and he knows you're a fan. So he realizes he's not Trump, but he did want to pass a message along to you.
Thank you. But that is the funniest thing, I am a DeSantis. I am a DeSantis fan. All right, guys. Have a great night.
I'll see you Saturday, man.
Next week, bro. Hey, thank you, Pat. Have a great time in Florida, mate. Bye.
You too, Rollo. Thanks.
Keep talking, man. What was we were talking about guitarist though before. What's his name that was on the Lightning Strikes? That got shot 3 times allegedly. I actually was a big fan of that guitarist prior to Zach Wild and Lightning Strikes era, mid 1980s. He was good.
I'm not familiar enough to keep up with what you're.
Anyway, you keep talking anyway. Keep talking.
Well, I know that Jakey Lee has had issues with Sharon, especially. I think we talked about that last week.
Okay, Jakey Lee played Lightning Strikes. He apparently got shot 3 times about 2 years ago or 1 year ago. I was a big fan of Jakey Lee. Big fan. To me, he was my favorite guitarist prior to, what's his name? Played after him, Zach Wild. Prior to Zach Wild, it was Jake E. Lee. Now, when he turned up, he had a huge gap between, he came out very slowly. This is on the actual live concert of the Back to the Beginning last week or 2 weeks ago. But when he came out, he was fantastic, but apparently he's got arthritis, which I've also suffer from.
Mm-hmm.
He was also playing. I was impressed. I thought he was still good. I'm really impressed with Kiss at the moment. I was never a Kiss fan at all. And last night on the road home to where I get home to my house where I live, the guys I listen to on Friday nights, they had a Kiss special and they played a song by Kiss and I was listening to it and I was going, this is high class heavy rock of the highest magnitude. And it was written by, what's the Italian guy, the main guy, not Gene,
Ace Frehley,
it was
Paul Stanley.
It was Paul Stan, a new song. So it came out in 2012, which is 13 years ago. And I said to, I rang them up, and I said that was the best Kiss song I've ever heard before. I'm now a Kiss fan, just based on what I listen to. And it was Paul Stanley. It was a song called about falling down or whatever it was called. I'll send it to you so you can listen to it. I was baffled at how good Kiss were in 2012.
Kiss is a very interesting story. One of my favorite things, and I may have mentioned this too, when Henry Rollins interviewed Gene Simmons. Henry Rollins had a little talk show on some minor network for a while.
Interesting.
And he said that, people used to slam Kiss back in the day for being primitive musically. And it, I didn't like them at the time because I was kind of listening to Zeppelin and like Lynyrd Skynyrd sort of at the time, competing directly, let's say, right? Yep. And Lynyrd Skynyrd was way more talent musically in terms of the playing ability and whatnot.
Oh my God, absolutely.
But of course, the Kiss would sell out probably way sooner than a Lynyrd Skynyrd show might sell out. They had a fan base, and then with all the makeup and the pyrotechnics and everything. And Henry asked Gene Simmons, he said, what do you think about the people that said, you know, the Kiss are not that good, and they really don't have any place in the, you know, rock and roll music business. And Gene Simmons said, no, they have it backwards. He said, these people are in the Kiss business now. And I had to admit he was right. Like, whatever he did, he turned everything around and made everybody compete with them, you know, even though they weren't really all that good. And an example I use a lot of the time, and Ab's a huge fan of Rush.
Yep.
And if you listen to their musical evolution, all of them in terms of playing, songwriting, production between their first record, like Working Man and Tom Sawyer, it's a really dramatic progression. You can see them just like develop kind of a garage band into a top level, you know, top of the industry now, writing production.
Now, fast David, have you ever heard of Moxie? And it's Moxy. Well, I think they were from Philadelphia. I'm not sure. I could be wrong there. This band that no one really has ever heard before sounds exactly like Rush at 72, 79, 71, 72. And every time I hear a song by them, I go, is that Rush? No, it's Moxie.
I'll have to look. I've never heard of them.
Look, neither had I. I would highly recommend you looking at Moxie and some of their stuff. It's on YouTube, I would say, as a guest. I'm really impressed. And I thought I should send it to Ab. Or maybe I have already done. I can't remember. Because he's a big Rush fan. Now, I'm a recent Rush fan. And these guys are absolutely phenomenal musicians. There's no doubt whatsoever that the drumming, the bass, the guitar, right when you need it to be there, it's there. So totally agree that Rush are the I wouldn't say that they're not the biggest band they should have been, but the people that appreciate music are into Rush, for sure. But Moxie, I've never heard of anyone into them. And I think they come from, I'm going to again say Philadelphia, wherever they come from. But highly recommend you listen.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people out there, too, that get overlooked. They just don't make it to that
level
where the lens of public attention or whatever gets to land on them for a little bit. And they get into the wider recognition. So there's all kind of people out worldwide that we will probably never hear.
Should have, would have, could have, but we didn't.
And sometimes I wonder about that too, if that's there's two things about it. It's like on the one hand, we get to hear Hendrix, which is awesome. Even after it's dead and everything. But on the other hand, you know, there's a lot of people that may, because it's a friend of mine told me when we were had our band recordings, like the minute you go into a studio and you record a song and you want to put it on the radio, you are in head-to-head competition with the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, Hendrix, anybody that's ever made a record. That's your competition. It's a very high bar for everybody.
The bar is extremely high.
And so you could have, you know, and I don't know, it's Dave J, goddamn you. I don't know whether I'm not going to judge it as a good or bad thing, but you know, there could be an argument that music is really something that you need to hear live in the moment. If it's not a tragedy, you might have a fantastic band that's in your town that I may never hear, but if I got to visit you, that would be the music I would hear. I'd be like, oh, yep, that's great. I got to go to, and then maybe there's somebody in Germany, and we don't all get to hear everybody everywhere. That's kind of what recording has done to a degree. I get to hear AC/DC and Men at Work. Actually, Men at Work opened for Toto last night, by the way.
Wow.
Along with Christopher Cross. And get this, dude. I had no idea that this concert was happening until I talked to one of my friends, and he said he was going. And he said, you should get a ticket. And I was like, my summer's kind of slow. I don't know if I could afford it.
Whoa.
But that ticket was $40.
Wow.
$40, bro, for Men at Work, Christopher Cross, and Toto. And I've been complaining about ticket prices recently. Now, granted, it was on the lawn at a big amphitheater, and I would have needed binoculars to see them properly. And they did have the camera and the big screens and everything, but the video director was just god awful. All my friends are in the AV business, and we were just complaining all night about how he can never find the singer or the soloist or anything. He was late for everything. But still, you know, we were there to hear, not so much see. It's great to see, but yeah, the sound was just unbelievably. I had my jaw around for most of them. It's just so good.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So, and I said that to say there's an artist in Texas, Monty Montgomery, a guitar player, and almost nobody's heard of this guy. And he actually did write the score for Tim Allen's Last Man Standing kind of sitcom for a number of years. So he's doing okay, but he's not a household name. And I saw him a couple of years ago, and there might have been 40 people in the bar, and I recorded some of my phone. But like, he's as good as anybody that's ever played the guitar. He's just that good.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Bye. And but you know, hardly anybody's heard of him, and unless you go to Austin and look him up, you're probably not ever going to hear him.
Austin, Texas is the music spot of America, but without any doubt.
It has that reputation. They promoted that. That's more of a marketing gimmick than anything else, especially now. Yeah, I have a friend here in Florida that I went to see the other night. He was playing at Margaritaville. Oh my gosh, man, Mark. Yeah, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Jimmy Buffett has this chain of hotels.
Yeah,
and it's
he's now dead. I do believe he's not alive.
I was unaware. Or maybe I heard it, didn't book.
Yeah,
he was around a long time, so he had a good run. And I actually, one of my good buddies I played with for a while was on tour with Jimmy Buffett for a number of years.
Yeah,
and a very, very fine saxophone player. But anyway, these hotels, they're called Margaritaville, and they have things about, you know, strumming my sixth string and nibbling on sponge cake. And it's like if you go, it's like the island experience. You want to go down to, say, Bequia or some, you know, Antigonese.
And some beach boy.
It's just, you know, if you go down there and you have the sand and the palm trees, and you might have, you know, cutting raw coconuts, giving you coconut water. And then they want to take that, and then they just put a big press on it and flatten it out.
Yep. You're and after show, Ricker.
Truth Meets is supported by listener donations. You can support us too.
through the last part of Rick and Rollo 39 and the after show, and we're talking about wonderful Fast Valley all the way from between Florida or Texas. He's there.
Definitely a Southern boy.
Yeah, I just want to be the first one to say that you guys, this is a great show.
Hey.
I want to be the first to tell you. And Rick show is a good show, and keep it going. Keep this one up.
Hey, first, we're talking about music. We
have a new show.
Finish my description of the Margaritaville experience. So you go down to the island and you're in the middle of a jungle with a zip line or whatever. And, maybe you're getting meat cooked on an open fire in Jamaica, and you bottle all that up, and then you press it all down and flatten it out and get a blueprint and re-render it out of like paper mache and aluminum. And you paint it with pastel. And the experience, I could imagine like the lobby of Meta or Google, like having a very similar vibe to Margaritaville.
Yeah.
But Margaritaville has all these tropical colors and painting of palm trees.
It sounds like Disney.
Yeah, like Disney, exactly. It's that same vibe. It's just an example of a little bit more concrete version of virtual reality.
Yeah, why not?
Right. It's so far away from the actual experience. It's a joke, but I just walked in there and I'm like, oh, I can't believe this. I can't believe that's what this place is. I was just shaking my head. But my friend's a phenomenal guitar player, and it was great to see him, and he's got a gig there, and it's all great. But oh my, Margaritaville! But hey, what can you do? He capitalized on that song. He made a whole franchise out of it.
I would do the same thing.
And to be fair, I bet Jimmy Buffett himself has probably zero input into the way these places look and come across.
For sure, absolutely for sure. And he fell off the stage and Australia, while he was trying to do one of his solos, and badly injured himself, I do believe.
Well, what a story! That happened. Well, Frank Zappa was actually thrown off a stage in Germany by an insane fan. And evidently, the guy's story, he thought Frank Zappa was looking at his girlfriend, so he went up on stage. Physically assaulted him. And he was, I think he was pretty badly injured by that too for a little bit. And did you see the footage from, it was in some Scandinavian country, either Sweden or Denmark, when Dave Grohl fell off the stage and broke his leg?
Yep.
And he was continuing the show on the ground, laying on the ground with the mic, talking to the audience and encouraging them to wait, and they waited till he got back from the hospital and he finished the show.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Whatever you want to say about him and the Illuminati and all that stuff, that's something. I'm still impressed with the guy, and I can't take that away from him. Come on.
Why not? Well, he seems so likable. There's this thing about Dave Grohl. He seems to me to be a likable person. He's not unlikable. He just, everything about him, there's a likable part about his backstory, his...
Whatever. If you've been around these channels long enough, there's a group of people that have this idea that everything that we see or hear is somehow spoon-fed to us by the powers that be, and they give us this and they give us that, and I have very little patience for that. I know that there's a degree of nepotism. Dave Grohl, probably, if you look at Miles Mathis, he probably is some kind of crypto Jew that comes from aristocracy in Britain, whatever. The guy can play and sing and write songs however you want to slice it. He can do that, forget about it. So maybe he's used for some ulterior purpose, but I can't take the talent away from the guy. It's just, and the idea that they can somehow clone these people in a lab and engineer all this talent and creativity. It's like, no, that doesn't happen. They can, once they figure out they've got it and maybe they can use it to their advantage. And I've said many times, I just turned 65. I've got some time here. When I was in my 20s and I was in all these bands playing every night and, you know, wanting to get that brass ring of being a rock star, if I would have got a label deal, my album would have had pyramids on it, pentagrams, Baphomet, whatever. It doesn't matter. Anything, whatever you want to put on there, as long as I'm on a stage in front of 30,000 people. And I got to do that once. I got to play for 30,000 people once.
Well,
it's pretty phenomenal.
I'm impressed. All of a sudden, I've become more impressed with you. Fantastic.
It's a very strange experience. What was very strange about that experience was playing in front of 30,000 people is more isolating than playing for 100. You feel way, way more disconnected from the crowd. You're so far away because there's a big space between the stage and the first row. And then you'd have this giant spotlight in your eyes. You can't see anything past the stage. So you just feel like you're up there kind of like all by yourself, even though you're hearing all these people scream and yell and everything. But it's like, it's a very odd experience.
Man, I'm impressed. As usual, you're impressing me.
And dude, listen to this. It was a Latin artist that I got hooked up with, a friend of mine, when I was back in Florida back in the day. We flew down to, it was a brand new amphitheater in Paraguay. A beautiful place on the water. The vistas were just breathtaking. I got onto the stage for sound check in the afternoon and they had three boxes, cardboard boxes. They pull the, take the razor knife and cut one open. It's a Marshall head, then a Marshall cabinet on the bottom. It's a double stack Marshall, brand new. They pulled out and I played on that thing that night. The first time it ever been used. I'm like, oh yeah, this is awesome.
Why not? Fantastic.
Yeah, that was quite something.
Bartholomew, I've got to go. I've been up for way too long, but go to the you've got fakeology.com. You can go.
I looked earlier and I didn't see anybody there. I'm always happy when I my schedule coincides enough to get the opportunity to talk to you.
Hey, man,
I'm an hour ahead, so I'm a little bit more time with you this morning.
Always a pleasure. I'll be back on tomorrow night, probably around the same time. If you're around,
So if I want to look for, it's Back to the Beginning, and that's a concert with that features previous members of Ozzy. Is that right? Yep.
Everyone that's ever been anything to do with Ozzy Osbourne, guaranteed.
Wow. Yep. Awesome.
Except
Randy.
apart from Randy, you've got to watch Nuno Bettencourt's performance, because to me, I'm just going, as a fan of many years, this guy is actually doing some really high level guitaring. So do yourself a favor. If you can, check it out.
I do. And I told you last time we mentioned, I did get to hang out with Nuno for a little bit too.
I know. and you would have heard me going, whoa, because Nuno is going to become I'm going to have to say this guy, what he did on that concert is going to become lore. It's L-O-R-E or L-O-R whatever on heavy rock for some time. He did an incredible stuff. Hey dude, I gotta go, and I will speak to you whenever I do.
All right, Rick, thanks so much, man.
Thanks.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate. Be told.
All right, bye.